You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is episode 11 of the Stable Riding with Solange podcast. This is Solange Ellis, founder of Stable Riding for June 23rd. This is episode 11 of Stable Riding with Solange, part of Horses in the Morning. I am here the fourth Tuesday of every month to talk to you all about the rider and how we can make ourselves better in the saddle. Today, we're going to start a little differently with a story from my own life that fits into this month's theme perfectly. Dear listener, it was really hot here in Ohio last summer. Not only was it abnormally hot, but it stayed hot for an abnormally long time. All my horses always have stall fans in the summer, but this heat wave called for a massive stall fan system upgrade. So I started a big old fan project. I was cleaning the current fans, buying new fans, plus I invented, built new and improved stall fan hangers and was installing them. All told, it was about 50 total fans, and I needed help. So my one barn kid, who I've known for a million years, came to my rescue and started helping me. During this heat wave, on my day off, Sam agreed to come in and start hanging up some of the new fans on my fancy new hangers. I was out running errands with my kid, and she calls me for the stall list. I tell her that if she doesn't want to drag the big ladder out of the lab, she can just hop in the UTV, drive it into the barn, pull the UTV up to the stall fronts, because my UTV has a little flatbed on the back, and stand in the bed and reach the fan holders that way. I explain that I've been doing it that way all week, and it was super easy. A few minutes go by and she calls me back, so I answer, you know, through my car's CarPlay. And through my car's Bluetooth and speakers, I immediately hear her yelling, "You know, not everyone is 6 feet tall with freaky long Abraham Lincoln arms." Because see, I have about 6 inches on her, and I simply forgot. I forgot that a physical motion, simple and easy for me, was impossible for her to perform. And I'm going to say that again for the cheap seats in the back. A physical motion, simple and easy for me, is impossible for her to perform. The fan story, as it shall now forever be known, is a staple in my riding instruction because it perfectly illustrates what riders are dealing with. We are all shaped wildly differently, and yet we are all told the same basic thing when it comes to being taught to ride. For those of you listeners who haven't met me in person, I'm tall, like rode here on a comet from the planet Amazon tall. I was this height at 13, and it has both massive advantages to my riding as well as some pretty significant disadvantages, which is true for everyone. Every body type has its own strengths and weaknesses. It's the instructor's job to teach the rider what those strengths and weaknesses are and help the rider support the weaker spots and leverage their strengths. As I continue this series of podcasts, I'm going to have more rider body type episodes, as I feel it's something that's endlessly overlooked in our industry. And that's to the detriment of both the horse and the rider. So today's pod is all about tiny ladies and the specifics of how they need to ride. I walk around all day seeing women with my eyeballs, and the majority of them are much closer to 5 feet than the nearly 6 feet I stand at. Petite ladies are a huge portion of the riding community, and yet no one teaches them to ride, taking into consideration their individual body type. These riders are often also light mass. And this will be a future episode topic, but it's worth mentioning here anyway. 120 pounds is minimum optimum rider mass. And many children and petite adult riders are often below or only just at or above that mass limit. We all have to admit that traditional riding instruction was designed for athletic male bodies. The cavalry, classical dressage, and classical equitation are the roots of what we really still teach today. And this was all created in a time period where women were still in skirts and riding side saddle. Yet we insist on teaching kids and small women to ride like grown men, which is both illogical and dangerous. We must take individual rider body type into consideration if we want safe, stable, happy, and effective riders. The minimum rider body based on those traditional principles is a lean, athletic male build, 5'6 to like 5'10, I don't know, 160, 180, something around there. And I don't disagree with that assessment at all. If you lined up a bunch of new recruits and I had to pick from those men to fill my cavalry program, you bet your butt that's the body type I'm picking. But I'm not creating soldiers on horseback for a living. So I get to have my all-rider stance, where I teach everybody, which is really way more fun and more interesting. So I'm quite happy with my current gig. That being said, I appreciate that anyone who is not that young, lean, athletic male body type will struggle and sometimes fail if forced into a system not built for them. Like my barn kid Sam, who could never, ever hang fans from my UTV bed, and no amount of someone yelling, "Think tall, reach more, or lengthen your arms," would change that for her. As you can imagine, I talk to lots of riders. And now, more than ever, those riders are from all over the world. They're in my comment section, my email, and my DMs with tons of questions and requests for help. And I make it a point to try and answer each one of them. And part of that answer always includes me asking them the following. I ask their age, height, and approximate weight, as well as a photo of them sitting on their horse from the side. This gives me the data I need to start my diagnostic process. I need to see their individual body geometry. Arm length, leg length, torso length, and chest circumference are all huge factors in how riders ride. This greatly affects their center of mass and how that relates to the axis of rotation where their body touches the horse or the saddle. Which brings me to the bad news for all us horse people who are horse people because we aren't number people. Riding is just math. It's a complicated physics equation. We have the human and their skeletal conformation and mass distribution. Then we have the horse. And I ride and teach on so many different breeds and types of horses that I've stopped categorizing them by breed. Now I sort them by high head carriage and low head carriage, because from there you can pretty accurately predict if they're going to be a flat mover or a vertical mover. Next up, we have saddles. The saddle shape and flap conformation can have a huge impact on the rider's position. The next layer after that is stirrup length, which has to be the correct length for the rider to access stability. And that standard phrase of lengthen or shorten your stirrup a hole is useless, as it does not consider the fact that these holes are punched at all sorts of different distances. Some English leathers have holes punched a half inch apart. Some Western fenders, the difference is almost 2 inches. Or are you stirrupless or bareback? Or are you side saddle with just one stirrup? Then we have the activity you're participating in with your horse. Are you going slow? Are you going fast? Are you jumping? What's the terrain? The pitch of the ground? It gets very complicated very quickly. In my own body, I'm nearly 6 feet tall and 150 pounds with ridiculously long arms and legs plus a very short torso. I ride a horse a certain way based on my individual skeletal conformation. I also appreciate that I am an uncommon female body type. And therefore, the majority of the women that I teach will not look like me, which means that they will need different instruction to be stable and have effective aids. To be blunt, I teach a ton of short chicks, 5'4" and below. In fact, I teach so many women who are only just about 5 feet tall, so nearly a foot shorter than me. Dear listeners, that is a massive difference. I also teach men taller than me. Not often, but every so once in a while, I get a guy whose stirrups are longer than mine. Therefore, it is conceivable that on a normal day of work for me, in the span of 2 hours, I can teach a woman who's about 5 feet tall and then a man who is 6'5" tall. That's almost an 18-inch difference. Now, I need to pause here and say this. Both that man and that woman, in spite of the massive physical differences between them, can both be stable, effective, and successful riders. But if you think that they're going to do it the same way or can be furnished with the exact same physical technique instructions then you are simply bananas. Tiny ladies, and in my head, that's anyone under 5'4" tall, need to ride the special tiny lady way, because there is one. And having taught years and years of kids and tiny ladies, I know exactly what they need. Shorter riders have shorter arms, so they often struggle with hand position and rein length. I tend to recommend that they buy extra long reins regardless of their horse's neck length. They have shorter legs, so kicking and leg aids are going to look and land differently for them. They do better on slab-sided or narrow-bodied horses, and they do better in less built-up or flatter, flapped saddles. They also need a stronger mounting technique. Their overall leverage and pressure level of their aids will be less than that of a larger male counterpart. Often the smaller ladies weigh less, so they're displaced out of the saddle at a lower motion or movement threshold than heavier riders. Big dudes, they can get away with riding like a soup sandwich for much longer. It's harder for a horse to displace a 200-pound slab of man, and it's also harder for them to bust a move with a big dude strapped to their back than a teeny little lady. I will say, though, that when big dudes fall off, they fall off. Like, bam. So it's not all roses and sunshine for them either. Also, tiny ladies tend to hate their stirrups. They dislike them, they fiddle with them, and I find that a lot of times they tell me they're happier without their stirrups or bareback. So I spend a lot of time healing tiny ladies' relationships with their stirrups. For today, I have not one, but two tiny ladies as guests. I've been excited about this recording for months, as these two are not just a hoot. They are, at minimum, a hoot and a half. Tara and Jocelyn are fixtures here at Stable Riding and often bring me into tears of hysterical laughter, so you better buckle up and cover your butts. It's tiny lady time. OMG, can you believe it, ladies? The Tara and Jocelyn show is officially gonna be on the airwaves.
The suspense has been killing me.
I know.
I've been waiting my whole life for this.
We have trained our whole lives for this moment. Okay, I'm gonna jump into it. All right. This is my first interview with two guests, but I think I have the questions spaced out. So everybody who's listening, this is my first time wrangling two tiny ladies via pod for the first time ever, but hopefully I can keep it straight. Tara, let's start with you. Can you tell us your age, your height, and your approximate weight?
Yeah, absolutely. I am 38 years old. I am 5 foot with a very important 1/2 inch on top. And as of a couple hours ago, I'm 153 pounds. So much like the old children's teapot song, I'm a little short and stout.
Jocelyn, can we have your stats as well for the listeners?
Absolutely. She might be short and stout, but I feel old and tired. So I believe I am 5'11". Like, I might have been 5'1 at one point in my life, but I'm pretty sure I'm shrinking. And I weigh 128 pounds and the wonderful age of 45.
Wow. You look amazing for 45, Jocelyn. You should never tell anybody.
I feel the same way. Actually.
Yeah. You look great. You shouldn't tell anyone.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, ladies. So now, as you know, we move into giving the listeners a little bit of your riding background so that when we jump into the episode, they know kind of who you guys are and how you ride. So Tara, if I remember correctly, you rode when you were a little baby, right? Didn't you ride as a kid, like some Western lessons?
I did. I rode on and off a bit throughout my childhood, started relatively young. And then I rode again in middle school, kind of like 12 years old-ish. And then early 20s, before I found you, I rode. And all of that riding was done through our park system here locally. They had a stables there, and it was just a lot of group classes and a lot of trail rides on some very old but very lovely horses.
Yep. And then I've had you for, has it been 10 years?
It has been, yeah, just over 10 years, actually. I think it would have been 10 years in April.
Wow, that's crazy. I only know because I remember how young my kid was when we met.
Yep. That's how I keep track of it.
Because it feels like forever, but also yesterday at the same time.
Yep. You can't, keeping track of times with people's kids is just a devastating thing in life.
It really is. It really is. And then Jocelyn, you didn't ride until you were an adult because I was your first instructor, right? Like, I had you from the onset. Isn't that true?
The very, very, very first instructor.
And I've had you 8 years?
Working on year 9 this fall.
Oh my God. Isn't that bananas?
It really is. I feel like it was just yesterday.
Now, Jocelyn owns not just a horse. She owns the horse. She owns Queen Waffles. Can we talk about Queen Waffles for a minute?
Actually, I'm pretty sure if we don't, she'll have my head. So absolutely.
She'll be like off with her head.
Absolutely. You know, I the best way I can describe her is we're not that typical rider horse combo. Sometimes I'm not even really sure who's in charge. She's the sweetest. She's sweet. She gives kisses. She like gives you the cuddles.
Yes.
I mean, really is. She takes excellent care of me, but truthfully, I know people laugh at our relationship, but it truly just works.
Yes.
She's got a heart of gold. If mm-hmm. I happen to fall, she's there just waiting for me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely adore her though. She's a little bit fast, but you know, I can't have anything boring. So
whenever I describe Waffles to people, I say she's never bad. Like she's too put together to be bad. Like it would be beneath her to like misbehave, but she's very opinionated. She reminds me of like one of those old timey, like really serious suffragettes who's like votes for women, but like her hat's pinned on really tight. Like she's got an opinion, but she's not going to be bad because that would be like uncouth. Don't you agree, Jocelyn?
Absolutely. I actually described her one time as she's like the employee who is amazing at their job, but kind of takes, you know, leniencies every now and again, stays a little too late at lunch, comes in
yes.
later than they should, leaves early, but she's so good at her job that you just have to hold on.
Yeah. Because nobody cares.
Nobody cares. They're just looking past it.
And this is a good example of when I try and match horses and riders, I don't always do it by what the rider's looking for or what the horse can do. I do it fundamentally by disposition, because if the horse likes to be communicated to the way the human likes to communicate, the relationship always works regardless of anything else. So Jocelyn was a newish rider, an adult, right? And we sold her how old was Waffles? Was she 8?
She was 8.
We sold her an 8-year-old chestnut Arabian mare who was like greenish broke. And everyone's like, is that a good idea? And I'm like, this is going to be great. And it has been great. You might own another horse one day, Jocelyn, but you will never own another Waffles.
I know. And she just turned 14. It kills me because even though I know she's not old for an Arab,
I just get at it
thinking one day that, you know, it's just not going to be the same anymore.
I know. It's really crazy, isn't it? I love Waffles. I think she's so pretty that every time I walk past her, I go, Waffles, you're so pretty. And I've said it so many times in my life that I had a dream that I walked past her. And in my dream, I went, Waffles, you're so pretty. So it's like permeated my subconscious.
Oh, you know, everybody says that, but here's what I just thought everybody was like laughing or doing it because all the time I'm like googly baby talking her. So I think you guys are just doing
I genuinely think she's beautiful, though she refuses to take a good photo.
Oh my God. We're the same way. I take terrible photos. She takes terrible photos.
I can only get a good photo of Waffles if she doesn't know I have my phone out.
But you know what? That we just work though. You said something really like that stuck with me. She's not the perfect horse. She's the perfect horse for you.
Yes. Snap.
That has always stuck with me.
That's a good line. Past me had a good line. I should write that down because I don't remember saying that.
Oh man. It's like a core memory.
All right. See, listeners, while I'm very tall, I really do, I think, as well as I can, understand and fully appreciate the challenges that tiny women have when they were in the saddle. And Tara, I remember your arms and hands being something that you struggled with in the beginning. And there was perhaps an incident with maybe a fish taco.
There might have been. Yeah. So earlier in my riding days with you. So I guess over the last 10 years, it would have been pre-COVID, because that's how we keep time now.
It is, yes.
Yes, I had some real wonky donkey hands and arms. They were up, they were everywhere, they were doing their own thing. And at the time, it had caused me to fall off quite a number of times, and it was really the direct cause of it.
Yes.
And Rex, my horse, was not the biggest fan of crinkly sounds.
Yes.
So plastic bags, plastic bottles, things like that. He hated it. If he heard it, he would turn and take off with or without you.
Yes.
And the day of the fateful taco incident, I was walking Rex around the arena. I think we were towards the end of our ride. And yeah. I was handed a delicious, hot off the presses, homemade fish taco wrapped in aluminum foil. And so we were just standing, you know, kind of near the bounding block at the end of the arena. And, you know, I was about to unwrap my taco and enjoy it on my, you know, fateful steed. And Rex was not on board with that. As soon as I touched the foil, he turns to the right and bolts down the long side of the arena.
Yes.
Someone who shall remain nameless, Solange, was yelling, "Don't drop your taco." And I felt like that was some important information.
Can you guys hear the face I'm making? That was not what I said.
Literally exactly what I said more than one time.
Drop the taco.
Did not. So, at the advice of my very trusted coach and trainer, I did not drop my taco. So, I have my foil wrapped taco in one hand and the reins in the other. And Rex
bolting
is
hysterically down the long side.
So Rex hits the far side of the arena, the back wall, and turns relatively abruptly. You know, he might want me to hit the wall, but he doesn't want to hit the wall. So I go flying off Rex.
Lands. Then holds her hand up.
I hold the hand up with my perfectly untouched, still perfectly wrapped taco with not an ounce of oxygen left in my lungs. But the taco was okay.
Oh, my God.
And once the air was returned to my lungs and I had fully oxygenated my body again, I enjoyed a delicious, utterly delicious, warm, juicy fish taco.
Those were the best fish tacos.
And never fell off Rex again, because that was the fourth time. And that was kind of the straw that broke my back. And we remedied the arm situation very quickly after that. It kind of put everything into perspective. It put everything that you've been teaching me blatantly in front of me. So I finally decided to listen to what you've been telling me about my hands and arms. And I put those down, and that was that.
That was that. And if I can say, Tara has a lovely chest. She's quite well endowed. So we have a chest circumference and a short arm all in a tiny lady. And that, that creates a very specific physics equation that with the fish taco and the standard bread off the track was just one too many things. But that's why you were in my phone for like 5 years as Taco Tara.
Yep.
That's the Taco Tara. Oh,
that's where it came from. So you were dropping lore here on the pod, Jocelyn.
Taco Tara.
Farm name came from that lovely taco incident, which is good because there were a few more incidents that I'm really glad I didn't get a name from. So I'll take that.
That's the one. Yeah, it could be so much worse. So Jocelyn, you know, Queen Waffles is a dynamic mover. She has a high head carriage. And I knew the mare would jump when we found her. I did not know she would jump. Like, she has springs in her actual hooves. Like, that mare, like, jumps, like the cow jumping over the moon. Do you feel like there are times when you get displaced out of the saddle by her motion sooner than maybe, like, I would, being taller and heavier than you? I'm especially thinking about all those fences that you jump at the hunt and at the hunter paces, and that maybe there was a blessing of the hounds where perhaps the entire field clapped for you.
that hunt, that blessing was probably one of my like top tier riding experience ever. And so many stories came from that afternoon. But yes, I do maintain that the entire first flight applauded for me as I went over a jump and I was brought forward.
Yep.
And then I kid you not, one leg straight up in the air, the other one like kind of back, head just on my horse's neck. By the way, she is a saint too, because unfortunately there have been a couple times that I've fallen on her neck and she just is like, whatever, just pick yourself back up. Yes, that did happen. And I will tell you one other thing. I don't know if you remember this from that ride. That was the same day that I looked at your daughter and I said, if I don't open my hands, I'm going to die. And there was not an ounce of me joking. Like, I was dead serious.
Yes.
After every jump, I thought, and I'm like, I got to open my hands, got to open my hands. I opened my hands and I survived. She will pull you forward if you don't.
Well, and let me paint the picture for the listeners. So Waffles has a high head carriage, right? She's an Arabian. And she goes up to the fences with her heads quite up, and she wants to jump. So Jocelyn has good rein contact, so she's not like jumping the horse in front of her as she's jumping the fences at the hunt. But then the mare goes really up high, but then she has to come back down. She has to land. And on landing, Waffles's head moves away from Jocelyn's body as Jocelyn is beginning to sit back, because at the hunt, you don't land on your horse's neck, you land in your feet. So you have to stand your landings, kind of like an eventer who's jumping a drop jump. So the distance between Waffles' very long neck and head that's going down on the descent and Jocelyn's teeny tiny little Jocelyn arms is a really big distance. And if Jocelyn doesn't relax her hands and open up her hand pressure so that as Waffles lands, the reins can kind of slip through her hands a little bit, Waffles yanks Jocelyn bodily forward, which is how you end up slightly upside down and monkey clinging on her back.
Yes. I believe the name I received that day was stage five monkey clinger.
Yes. And I've taught three tiny women in the last like few weeks at different events that I've had since I've been back from Western states in California. And I look at them all. I'm like, you're just like a stage four clinger, right? And they're like, oh yeah, I just cling on. And that's an option available to them because they're so petite. At my height, I can't cling.
If there's a wrestling match with reins, I'm definitely not winning.
I know.
Waffles will teach you that physics is real. I mean, there's, you know.
That mare jumps, man. That mare jumps. She sure does.
I wouldn't have it any other way, though, to be honest with you. I love it.
I love to clear a fence by a foot. I'm always the most comfortable. I don't like to hear hooves hitting coops. Mm-mm. I like a lot of air. I like a nice, generous amount of room between me and my obstacle when I'm jumping. Tara, we spend a lot of time together in the lab. Between the cold weather up here, Tara's not a cold weather fan, and the fact that you have a brand new little baby girl, Miss Sawyer, there are times when it's hard to ride consistently. And I know you love your Equisizer and your Equisizer time. So I'd ask you to tell the listeners a little bit about how you feel about the Equisizer and the lab and how you feel that it keeps your skills up during those busy, tricky times of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the last few years, there have been a few gaps and breaks in my riding, whether it be a couple weeks or a couple months. And most recently, tomorrow will be my first lesson back after a year from becoming a mother.
And we're going to be in the lab.
And we will be in the lab. And without the lab and without the Equisizer, there is zero way I would have been able to maintain any sort of my riding form during and after those breaks. And having the Equisizers at my disposal and being able to have some time off, whether it be for winter because it's, you know, 3 degrees all the time and I'm not putting on 56 layers of clothes to ride because it's miserable. Mm-hmm. Or if it's, you know, I've been out because of my daughter, it will allow me and allows me to get back in there and get my body ready and get my body primed and kind of reactivate that muscle memory that I may or may not have lost over my time out. And the Equisizer has been absolutely fantastic at that. If it weren't for the Equisizer and if it weren't for your lab, I without a doubt would have lost weeks, if not months, of skills and work that I've put in over the last 10 years. And, you know, I'm sure when I get there tomorrow for my lesson, it'll become evident to me where things stand, but I have no doubt that having the Equisizer will help me get back to where I was quicker. It helps us and it helps riders not lose the skills that we're not using during our time off, whether it be injury or anything like that. And it's something that I couldn't imagine riding without going forward. Having the Equisizer and having the tools that you have in the lab have truly helped shape who I am as a rider because it allows everyone who uses them to focus on just your skills, just your body, just placements, just muscles, instead of, you know, having to worry about the Rexes or the Waffleses of the world as to what they're thinking that they're, what they're going to do underneath you or what might happen as kind of an outside force while you're riding. So I do not know where I would be in my riding journey without the lab and without the Equisizer.
Well, and I think too, it makes re-entry seem more achievable. It's one thing to go, I haven't been on a horse in a year. I'm going to go in the lab and get on the Equisizer and stretch and kind of move around and look at my body in the mirrors and just do some light exercises and feel where I'm at versus I haven't been on a horse for a year. Now I just have to get on one. Like, I just got to put my foot in the stirrup and get on a horse and hope everything works. I think it can make re-entering more difficult. And that's how a lot of people end up stop riding because life interferes. They don't ride for a long time. And now the task of reentering the saddle can feel overwhelming and insurmountable.
Yep.
And it makes it difficult to access.
Yep. You know? I couldn't agree more. It's helping. I'm not that I wouldn't be excited to come back if I had to go straight to a horse. Great. Obviously, I ride horses because I love horses. But the fact that I know that I can go into the lab, I can work on what I need to work on, I can get loose, I can get my hips going, I can get to a point where I'm comfortable and ready to be like, yeah, sure, let's do it. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to kick butt. Really helps your confidence, and it helps just solidify that you're doing things the right way after a long time off.
Jocelyn, like many petite compact like body type riders, like I call like the top of the cheerleading pyramid, like gymnast body types, sometimes larger motions are harder to sit because it's a bigger motion, you have less torso, you don't have that like vertical length to kind of allow that mobility in your body. And Waffles has, let's call it, a one of a kind canter motion. So she's a little bit harder to sit. And I remember us working in the lab on your sitting canter and then you coming in the next day and telling me that you had like a mad scientist 3 a.m. eureka.
Oh, yeah.
Are you again willing to share that story?
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. I have a lot of those moments. Normally they're like bills or... work related,
right? Something fun.
But that night, I could not sleep because I'm like, "What am I doing? I rock it in the lab. I mean, I'm moving, I'm going, and then I get on my horse and it's like flump, 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 flump. I'm like, what is happening? So I get my phone out and I had a video that you had recorded of me cantering Waffles down alongside. And literally 3 a.m. in the morning, I'm sitting there and I'm just taking my finger and sliding back and forth frame by frame. And it hits me. And I'm like, holy, put any swear word in there because they would all fit. I'm not even moving correctly on my horse. I had no idea. And I'm talking years. Like, this wasn't like, hey, I just started my lessons, blah, blah, blah.
We were ways in.
We were ways in. Yeah. It was me. What my brain thought my hips were doing was completely different than what they were actually doing on a horse. Like, it wasn't, I was like scooping the saddle versus that back and forth motion.
Yes.
And yeah. And I thought I had it. So I watched that video and I am so, my mind is blown. I can't go back to sleep. This is like just too much. I think I told you the next day, I was seriously thinking of calling you at 3 a.m. to tell you. I'm like, well, that she's probably going to think I'm weird then. And that's not a good idea. So I'm talking myself out of it. So I came in the next day and I know I looked like a crazy lady because my eyes were glassy because I was up all night. And I was so excited to tell you. And I will say from this moment on, things have not been the same for the better.
I remember you coming in and you're like, it's 3 a.m. and I'm watching the video and I'm like, these are my hips. I'm on my, oh, you get on your horse. She's like, is this it? Am I doing it? Is this it? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, I felt like a crazy person. And I went, Jocelyn, that's called like a breakthrough. Like you had like a eureka moment. Like you received a download from the universe.
So I'm pretty sure I woke my husband up that day. Or I think I woke him up that evening or that night, 3 a.m. Not because I wanted to tell him, but just because I was like, holy, talking to myself, watching the video. I just, so much excitement. You would have thought like I just won the lottery or something.
It was a huge deal.
It was a huge deal.
And part of it was I had the lab. Because when you started with me, I didn't have the lab. So we didn't have the tools. And then once I got the tools and I realized how to use them, I was like, you know what? You know who I got to bring over here? I got to bring Jocelyn over here. And I don't know how long it would have taken for you to have that physical conclusion had we not had those tools. I think it would have happened eventually, but it might have been a lot longer.
I don't tell anybody I said this, but I'm not sure because, I mean, when my brain is set in something, it's set. Right. And it took me doing it on the Equisizer and then seeing myself. Like I had my brain convinced me that I was doing it correctly. So I mean that your lab is, I'm going to be on. At first I was like, if I'm going to pay to ride a horse, I want to ride a horse.
Right. Exactly.
But
you know, but I will tell you the things that you can do and the things you do are just amazing. It's definitely changed my riding.
It's been an incredible journey. I have so much fun teaching in there. All right. To wrap up, Tara, what would you say to other petite lady riders knowing what you know now?
Knowing what I know now, I would say just do the dang thing.
You're like, don't drop the taco.
Don't make like,
just drop it.
Under no circumstances, no matter how many times someone, Solange is telling you not to drop your taco, don't drop the taco. It'll be delicious once you get the air back in your lungs. But what I would say is just do it, because contrary to popular belief, size does not always matter. And with the right coach and the right tools, being petite, and you know, whether you're petite and round like me, or you're petite and skinny like Jocelyn, or if you're heavy up top or not, it's being petite will have little to no impact on your rider journey if you have the right tools and the right coach. And yeah. I would say just do it.
Just do it, man. Just do it. That's great advice. Jocelyn, I want to just really say this to you, because sometimes I think you don't give yourself enough credit. You did the thing. You have completed so many adult riders' absolute dream. You learned to ride, bought the horse, have the truck and the trailer, and now you are safe, stable, and self-sufficient. There are so many beautiful spring and fall Friday afternoons where you hitch up, load up, and take Waffles to the park by yourself.
By myself.
You have done it. Having done all that, and knowing that this pod might reach a rider who started on that journey, what advice or encouragement would you like to give them?
Oh my goodness. I do not give myself enough grace. Almost never. It is something I'm working on, but
yes.
I think that if I had to say anything, I would say that remember, keep in mind that, you know, progress is not always comfortable. Mm-hmm. If I had a nickel for every time I left the barn in tears saying mm-hmm. I was never coming back mm-hmm. and I would call somebody else who probably called you afterwards and told mm-hmm. them, I'm done. I can't mm-hmm. do this. I'm not coming back. I'm terrible. I think that that would be just to give yourself grace, whether you are starting this journey, and don't compare your chapter one to somebody else's chapter 20, because that is something 100. Else. That I do frequently. And 100. It has taken a while. There's been crying in the middle of the arena as yes, I was sitting, not on a horse.
There has, yes.
But I finally feel that I'm in a place, and I've been here for a bit now, where I can do something wrong, or somebody can tell me, or maybe I am not capable of something at that moment. And I can look at myself and say, okay, I can't do this yet, but you know, we'll get there.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, I think, amazing advice, and also a huge indication of how much progress you've made in your riding journey and in your confidence, Jocelyn.
Thank you. I'm going to cry.
You should be really proud of yourself. I always tease Jocelyn that this year we have a new Jocelyn. I'm like, it's the drop of the Jocelyn 17 Pro, like the Woo! iPhone.
Oh, yeah. And it's official now, because if you read my saddle, that is the name of my saddle, Jocelyn 17 Pro.
Dude, I love it. I love Jocelyn 17 Pro, but I'm excited for Jocelyn 18 because I know I'm going to get an 18. I'm like, what comes next? It's going to be something amazing.
Oh, you know, that's going to be travel, I think. Travel and riding. Yes.
Oh, I can't wait for you. I can't wait for you.
I'm excited.
Ladies, thank you two so much for taking the time today, for being on the pod, and for sharing your stories and your incredible tiny lady personalities. I love you both so much.
I love you too. Happy to be here.
Thank you, girls. I'll see you all.
Did I get the job, ladies?
Yes, you totally are hired.
I'm hired. Cool. All right. All right. Thank you.
Bye. Writing this podcast was really interesting for me. In the 2 weeks leading up to recording this, I met and taught so many tiny ladies. I was in California at the Western States Horse Expo, and a lady there in my clinic was under 5 feet tall. And then I came home and had two more tiny ladies in another clinic. I kept telling them that this episode was coming out and that they should look for it. So ladies, this one is for you. And if you know an awesome tiny lady who rides, please share this episode with them too. All right, for today's rider tip and homework, we're going to talk about turning. And what I call arm pulling versus back pulling. I will talk about direct reining first, where you hold one rein in each hand, and then neck reining second, where you hold both reins in the same hand. And if you're like, duh, I know what neck rating is. You don't have to explain it. I get it. But there may be a listener here who's new to riding, and I want to make sure I make myself extra clear. The language we use to teach riders to turn when they're direct reining is usually something like this. Pull to turn, or to turn left, pull with your left rein. This is a problem, as using the word pull encourages riders to grab onto their rein with their hand and use their arm muscles to pull, which is bad. When you pull with your arms, you're only using your arm muscles, which is not enough to turn a horse who does not want to go in that direction. It also pulls your torso forward into the horse. You're actually pulling yourself forward and out of the saddle, which makes you unstable, tips your weight onto the horse's forehand, making it harder for them to turn physically beneath you. It also robs you of your weight aids as it pulls you forward off your seat bones, which then closes your hip angle and makes it harder to use a leg aid. In conclusion, arm pulling keeps you from clearly communicating to your horse the direction you want them to travel in. And if they're having like a big feeling moment beneath you when you're trying to turn them, you are now unstable and at a risk of being displaced off their back. All coaches have a different way of assessing and sorting their riders by skills and abilities. And mine looks a little odd. I don't care how long someone's been riding or what kind of horse they have. I don't worry about how fast they go or how high they jump or what ribbons they have won. I want to know the following. Can they sit their trot? Do they have functional leg aids, especially in the canter? And do they arm pull? That is how big of a deal this is. If a rider is an arm puller, when they turn and stop, it will hinder their ability to move forward in their riding journey. So how do you make sure that you're not arm pulling and instead back pulling? This is easy. While walking straight, make sure your reins are short enough length that you can feel your horse's face or mouth on in your hand on the reins as soon as you begin to move your body. If your reins are too loose, there will be too much slack in the rein for the motion of your body to reach the horse, and then they will not feel that pressure. And because there's no pressure, there's no aid, so they will not respond. So now I'm going to assume you're walking straight and your rein length is adjusted correctly. Next, we're going to move our horse to the left using our left rein. To do this, close the fingers of your left hand and tighten the muscles in your left arm. This freezes your left hand and arm into like a solid unit, like a stick. Then turn your head left, keeping your chin level, and try and turn your head so much that your chin almost lines up with your shoulder. So really turn that head. I always say, turn your head, turn your horse. Now pull your left shoulder back, twisting your shoulders to face your chest to the left, keeping your hips straight. I tell my riders to think about twisting their ribs like the rotating gun turret on the top of a tank. Or the robot girls from Austin Power movies, you know, the one with the guns in their boobs. Are you guys old enough to remember that? I am. So you do not pull to turn your horse, you twist to turn your horse. And you guessed it. To turn right, you do the exact same thing. With your right arm, right hand, right shoulder, right rein, twist right to turn right. This is very important for tiny ladies who have shorter arms and shorter torsos because they're more likely to get pulled forward by the reins, like Jocelyn mentioned earlier in the interview. For your homework, try this under really easy circumstances at first. At a walk, just lazy turning this way and lazy turning that way. Once that works, you can weave in and out of some cones if you want, like pony driving school. From there, add doing it the trot and the canter, and also try it in different positions, posting, sitting, with your feet in and out of your stirrups. I want turning correctly with your back, not your arms, to become unconscious competence. Many years ago, I had an ancient brown and white pony named Pop-Tart who terrorized children by dragging them over to the grass and trying to yank her head down to eat. Pop-Tart was a tough old broad. And I used to tell the kids that if they needed to keep her away from the grass with their rainbow reins and their scrawny little kid arms, they had to think about being a strong wood board and not a smooshy marshmallow. To teach them this, we played the treat game, Rye had a big old bucket of treats, and I'd stand in the middle of that arena, and I'd shake those treats, and I'd call Pop-Tart Tormi to try and lure her to come over to me, and I'd tell the kids, she can't have a treat this lap, you gotta keep going. And the kids would have to use their arms, like a board, they'd have to lean back and back pull to walk her past me. And then on the next pass, we'd let her come in and get a treat. And then as we went, we'd start to make it random, so Pop-Tart couldn't, like, anticipate. And the kids learned to be their best bored selves and not smooshy marshmallows. And the pony got a bunch of treats. It was a win-win. In fact, the kids liked it so much that even when they didn't need it anymore, they used to request it. They go, Miss Solange, can we play the treat game? And I go, sure, we can do whatever you want, kid. So if you really want to practice turning and have a little bit of fun, grab a friend and some treats and play the famous Pop-Tart Pony treat game. Now, for my neck reining riders, you're not going to have the same arm pull, back pull problem as the direct reining riders, as you're moving your hand or your arm laterally over to the side to turn your horse, not pulling back. What we do have at the intersection of tiny short arm and neck reining is a possible hand position problem. Since the hand position that you have when you neck rein at the neutral point where you're not turning your horse is in the middle of the horse's neck or the saddle, often these riders will end up having the shoulder of the hand that they hold their reins in rounded or pulled forward as they're reaching that hand forward into the middle of their body. So it's very important that these riders set the position of their body first and then that of their rein hand second. So I would recommend sitting still on your horse and sit straight and even on your horse with even pressure in your seat bones. Lift those ribs up so that your shoulders fall flat in the back. And then from that position, without changing the structure of your torso or the weight distribution in your seat bones, place that one hand in front of you on the center line. In order to not pull that rein shoulder forward, you may need to think about holding that hand much closer to your body than you think. I'm constantly telling people to put their hands closer to their lap. The biggest fault I see with my neck reining riders is that they displace that rein hand too far forward and it pulls that shoulder forward and it breaks the structural integrity of your body, which makes you unstable, muddies your weight aids, makes leg aids more difficult, et cetera, et cetera. If you're a neck reiner or a direct reiner and you have a question, email me, preferably with a picture of you from the side on your horse. My email is solange@stableriding.us, and I am literally actually here to help you. It's my job. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on my website at stableriding.us. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Stable Riding. We are here once a month on the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have our open RSS feed. Just search Stable Riding with Solange in your podcast player, or you can find us on the main Horses in the Morning feed. All riders can be stable riders, and a stable rider makes for a happy horse.